Okay, so we were talking a little bit about Tosefes Yom Kippurim yesterday. So there's one other mitzvah, or maybe the word mitzvah is not even the right word to use, which takes place just as Yom Kippur is beginning, and that's the notion of Hadlokas Neiros. So we're, of course, all familiar with the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neiros, primarily for Hadlokas Neiros Shabbos, that's the Gemara Maseches Shabbos. The Chazal instituted the mitzvah in the Rabban of Hadlokas Neiros Shabbos for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, for Shalom Bayis, because if it's dark, we're going to bump into each other. And to enhance the Onik Shabbos, that's why you should eat your meal dafka in front of the Neiros, and it's an expression of Kovet Shabbos. So for a variety of reasons, Chazal instituted the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neiros Shabbos. However, when it comes to Yom Kippur, so the Mishnah and the Gemara in the fourth Perek of Pesachim tell us that the regular dinim of Hadlokas Neiros don't really apply. There's a whole nother reason for Hadlokas Neiros Yom Kippur, if it even exists. And the Mishnah records that Mokom Shinagu Lahadlik Ne'er Yom Kippur Madlikim, Mokom Shinagu Shalol Lahadlik Emadlikim. That unlike Shabbos and Yom Kippur, the Zechiyah Gomim and the Rabbanim to light candles, Erev Yom Kippur is not really a chiyuv to light candles. So what do you live? You don't have to light candles. You're not eating bloody candles anyway. There's no Onik Shabbos anyway. So why in the world are you lighting candles? So the question is for a totally different reason. Because one of the dinim, one of the chamish inuyim, things you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur is tashvish shemitah. A couple are not permitted to be together. So Chazal were concerned that we don't want people to be nitshal in this avera. So some communities set up the following practice. They set up the practice that dafka, there shouldn't be any candles lit. When you come home, you walk to your house in Yom Kippur, it should be dark. You shouldn't see a wife. So there shouldn't be any concern of any avera. And other communities had the exact opposite approach. They said, no, we should dafka leave a candle lit in the house. Why? How does that help? Because there's a halacha that one is not permitted to be mishamish b'tasel or haner. There's a candle or a light mamish in the room that's on, so you're not supposed to be together with your wife. That's considered like a breach of tzniyos to be together when it's mamish, literally in front of the whole light, the whole room is lit up with a candle, so that's not appropriate. So therefore, some communities instituted a practice, dafka, to light candles on Yom Kippur. That way a couple will remember not to be together. In fact, it's Yom Kippur that they may forget. But when they see a candle, they'll realize, Asla Shabbos, Ritosla Yom Kippur, and therefore they won't violate the Isser of Tasha Shemit on Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah says, Yesh V'yesh. Malkam Shidogu to do one way, Malkam Shidogu to do the other way. Both communities were bothered with the same problem. They were trying to get to the same result, albeit slightly different ways. The minhag has become in our communities, Lahadlik is Neiros Yom Kippur. We have accepted upon ourselves that minhag, and therefore we do light candles on Yom Kippur. We even make a bracha on the lighting of the candles on Erev Yom Kippur. Many posts can say that in addition to the regular candles that you have downstairs, let's say in the dining room, since today most of our bedrooms are upstairs, so it doesn't really help that much to have the candles in the dining room, so it's probably a good idea to have some kind of a light or a candle or something. I tell people if they want to fulfill this properly, put a little Shabbos, a little plug-in electric bulb or something into the wall on Yom Kippur night in a room where a husband and wife are sleeping. So that really accomplishes this meaning in the proper fashion. So the lighting of Neiros, Erev Yom Kippur, Lamaisa we do, but it's a little bit of a different twist, a little bit of a different goal than the regular lighting. There is another halacha that comes up, particularly revolves around Hadlokos Neiros, and I touched a little bit on what we spoke about yesterday in the Tosefes, and that's the Brach of Shechianu. Just like we spoke about Lagavi Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara in the same sugyan, the end of the third Perek of Erevin says that you have to recite a Shechianu on Yom Kippur because Yom Kippur is a yontif, even though it's not a regular, it's not Shal Shur Golem, but it's a yontif of Bami Zman Lazman. It's only once a year Yom Kippur, and therefore it is appropriate to recite the bracha. What is required to recite the bracha, Shechianu Kiman Vigin Al Zman Hazeh. As we mentioned, Shechianu, technically speaking, can be recited even Shalol HaKos. L'chadchila, Chazal wanted Shechianu to be recited on the coast. That's what we usually recite on the coast of Yayin. But on Yom Kippur, that is not an option because you can't have a couple of kids if you want on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara in Erevin raises the question, why don't we do as follows? Something that we're familiar with, like from the 9 days. Let's make a Shechianu on the coast of Yayin and give it to a child to drink. What's so terrible? So the Gemara says that would be more appropriate because you want the Shechianu to be on the coast of Yayin. So just give it to a kid to drink. What's the problem? The Gemara says, no, Asil HaMisruch, that's very poor chinuch. Because then the child's going to think, oh, every year the chazan calls me up to drink a cup of wine, and the kid turns bar mitzvah, he's going to think, oh yeah, that's what you do. That's the minhag. Now shul, our minhag is we drink the Shechianu wine on Yom Kippur. So the kid's going to make a mistake. So therefore, with the Rabbanim, they said dafka not to do it that way. Dafka to recite the Shechianu without the kosher yayin and Yom Kippur, which is exactly what we do. So right after the chazan finishes kol nidre, the minhag is, the chazan, the whole tzibur, says Shechianu. But we mentioned that women have the custom, many women have the custom of saying Shechianu when they ben shalach. So when they bench left, when they light candles for Yom Kippur, they also say Shechiyanu. So that's what the look at the Mabzor, so it says, the women bench left, they say Shechiyanu, Shalom to Allah, HaKadosh Yom Kippur, and then they say Shechiyanu. So the problem is a lot of women don't realize that when they say Shechiyanu for the lighting of the candles, and then when they come to Shul for Kol Nidrei, they say Shechiyanu a second time, because it says the Mabzor, the whole congregation recites Shechiyanu now. That means the whole congregation minus the women. The women who had said it an hour ago don't say it. You only get one Shechiyanu per Yom per customer. So a lot of women don't realize that. So I think in the article Machzor they made a point of that. But the old Machzorim, it just says, Chazan and congregation recite Shechiyanu, not commenting the fact that half the people in Shul already said Shechiyanu an hour ago. So that's something to remember. When a woman recites Shechiyanu on... and she lights candles on Erev Yom Kippur, that's an outright Kabbalah Sayom. Even though we mentioned that when you light candles for Shabbos and Yom Tov, so the big question whether that constitutes a Kabbalah Sayom or not. Is that gufa considered to be an acceptance of the day? And our practice is that for women, when women light Shabbos candles, so we assume that's considered to be an acceptance of the Yom Tov or acceptance of the Shabbos, then they couldn't do any Malach anymore. But some Rishonim say, if you make it tonight, if you make a condition, so that it would be okay. You specifically light the candles, having in mind not to be Mekabel Shabbos. So we try not to rely on that all the time. Shas HaChak will rely on that. A lot of women like to rely on that for Yom Kippur because most Friday nights, most married women don't come to shul Friday to take care of the kids. But everyone likes to come for Kol Nidrei. Sometimes a woman lives far away, so it's very, very hard for her. The husband wants to drive to shul and leave the car there. And she has to bench left before she leaves, and she has to walk for 45 minutes to get to shul. So if it's a big, big tirchas, then the post give a mekel that she could be light the candles on Erev Yom Kippur, make the bracha, but have in mind, dafka not be makabel kedusha sayom at that point. The only thing is she can't say shechiyanu then. Because once you say shechiyanu, then it's a joke. I can say shechiyanu kibbal yigal azman azeh, but it's not really Yom Kippur yet. That's a contradiction. So therefore, the post can say, if a woman is going to drive, she's going to do malacha after lighting candles, b'shal sadchak, that she should dafka not say shechiyanu then. And then she should daka say it with the tzibur when they say it after Kol Nidrei. So the bottom line is, should a woman say shechiyanu when she lights candles or not? It depends. If she's lighting and then be makabel Yom Tov, then yes, she can say shechiyanu then and not say it later. If she's not makabel Yom Tov, then she dafka does not say it when she lights, and she dafka says it when later. So at the end of the day, all men and women, everybody has to have a shechiyanu, but a shechiyanu b'loshen yochid, one shechiyanu Yom Kippur, not two shechiyanus for any given person. So now we move into the main halachas that govern Yom Kippur. There are two basic areas of halacha that govern Yom Kippur in terms of Yisurim. One is the Isur Malacha. The Isur Malacha is not that much to talk about for us. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, but it's called Masechah Shabbos. So whatever you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. So you have to learn 157 blad in Shabbos, 105 blad in Erev, and you can figure out what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and that just spills over to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is different from all the other Yom Tovim, even though Yom Kippur is not quite on the same level of Kedushas Shabbos, but there is no Heter Vechol Nefesh. So even if you have a Chola or a child or something who's going to be able to eat on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to cook for them. You're not allowed to do any deraisa, they're about nothing. It's much the same as Shabbos. But putting aside the fact that there's a difference in terms of Onesh, Chil Shabbos is Beskila and Yom Kippur is only Bekares, small difference, Shabbos is also Bekares. But for the most part, vis-a-vis Malacha, there are almost no differences. One iota of a difference, a certain quirk of a difference, which is not really relevant for us anyway, because man is that. But Lamaise, 99.99% of Hilchot Shabbos and Hilchot Yom Kippur are identical in terms of Malacha. But in addition, of course, to the Yisur Malacha, there are all the Yisurim of eating, drinking, etc. So where does all this come from? So the Torah says, V'inisim esnaf shaseichem. The Torah says that you have to be ma'ani yourself in Yom Kippur. It says it several times. And kichol nefesh shel osu nefesh nichrus, anyone who doesn't perform inui on Yom Kippur is chayav karis. What does inui mean? So if you read the Torah Shabbosav, I don't have a clue what inui means. I don't know how to translate the word inui. So we have a tradition, ish v'pish and Moshe Rabbeinu. We have what's called the Perish HaMakubu Messina. We have a traditional interpretation of the phrase inui on Yom Kippur means not to eat and not to drink. That's the basic bare-bone definition of what it means in Yom Kippur. There's an issur d'oraisa to eat and to drink on Yom Kippur. Then the Mishnah speaks about other inuyim as well, other things that are also not permitted to do on Yom Kippur. And the Mishnah speaks about not washing and not anointing and not having relations and not wearing shoes. So what we call the Shari inuyim, the Chamish inuyim, in addition to eating and drinking. So where do those fit into the picture? So that's a big, big machlokes of Rishonim. So there are many Rishonim who said that those other inuyim are only midrabanan. That means the real halacha Moshe Messina definition of Yom Kippur only means not to eat and not to drink. The fact that lemaisi, you can't wash, you can't wear shoes, etc., those Shari Surim, the Shari Nuyim, are only in Midrabanan. What's the greatest proof to that? So the Mishnah says that you're not Chayav Kares for all those things. You're only Chayav Kares for eating and drinking. So some Mishnah said, why is that? Because the answer is, because they're Midaraisa, they're not Asar. If it's also with the Raisi, you have Kares. If it's also with the Rabbanim, there's no Kares. So many Rishonim were of the opinion that the whole institution of the Shari Nuyim were all with the Rabbanim. And there are certain rayas that are brought that seem to bear this out. There are certain limited circumstances where Chazal lifted some of the Inuyim. The Mishnah speaks about someone who's not feeling well, who's washing themselves, or the Mishnah talks about a kala just got married, or a melech, certain unique individuals who are allowed to wash themselves. So some Mishnah write, if these would be assumed deraisa, so none of these clues would be true, so it must be the whole thing is all mederabbanan. And other Mishnah disagree, and they're doich all the rayas. So the Rambam is one of the Mishnah who disagrees. The Rambam says, no. All the Isurim, all the Inuim are all Midaraisa, the full-fledged violation of Midaraisa. Why is there no Kores? There's no Kores. Why is there no Kores for wearing shatnas? Why is there no Kores for eating tray? Because the Torah doesn't say so. So Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that there are degrees of Inuim. Some of the Inuim eating and drinking are the highest level, the worst violations of Inuim, and they carry with them an Isur of Kores, and the others are just Isurim Yalma. So they're Midaraisa, but they're not necessarily Kores. So it doesn't make that much of a difference for us Lamaisa. Whether you follow the Rambam or the others, at the end of the day, the Mishnah says that you can't do it. So you can't eat, you can't drink, you can't wash, etc. All the Chamash Inuyim. But in Lomdus and conceptually, it's important to know whether we're dealing with the Derais or we're dealing with the Derabbanan. So we'll try to walk through a little bit some of the basic Dinim of Yom Kippur in terms of the Chamash Inuyim. So the Isser of Achil and Shtir are, of course, the most serious of all. So the Mishnah tells us that the Isser of Achil and Shtir and Yom Kippur are, especially Achil, is a little bit different than other areas of Achil in the Torah. We know that. We have a tradition, Ish Rapish and Mesh Rabbein, we have Halacha Moshe B'Sinai, that Stam Achila B'Kizayis. Whenever the Torah says the word Achila, it always means the size of an Allah, the size of B'Kizayis. So let's say, for example, the Torah says, B'Kizayis Torah Chil Matzah. There's a mitzvah in a Torah to eat matzah. How much matzah do you have to eat? A Kizayis, a bare bone, a Kizayis. Or the Torah says, you have to eat Korban Pesach. How much do you have to eat? You have to eat a Kizayis. But the Torah says, if you eat Chazah, you have Malkas. So how much do you have to eat to be Chai Malkas? A Kizayis. The Torah says if you eat chalev, that part of fats on the animal that's prohibited, if you eat more than kezayis, you chayev kares. So the Torah says time and time again, the lashon of achila. So the lashon of achila always conjures up that image of a kezayis. So here the Mishnah says, by Yom Kippur the whole picture is different. By Yom Kippur the shear is not a kezayis. The shear to be chayev kares is a kesevis agasa, the size of a big fat date. My manishtana, where did that come from? So the Gemara in Yuma explains that the Torah doesn't say the Lashon Achila in Yom Kippur. It says the Lashon Inui. So Inui means to afflict yourself. So if you eat, so then you're not afflicting yourself. So if a person eats a beer kezayis, he's still pretty hungry, so he still has not violated the Inui. You have to eat more than a kezayis in order to violate the Isur of Inui. So because the Torah dafka words it in a different Lashon, different Nusuch than other Isur Achila, you see from here that the Shira is slightly different. We're going to come back to this later on to see why this is important for us. It's going to be important in terms of chol and figuring out how much we should or should not feed people who may have to eat in Yom Kippur anyway. Just because we say that you only have kares if you eat a full shear, we pass the chatzit shear is also in the Torah. Even the smallest amount, chatzit doesn't mean literally half, means even the smallest amount. If a person takes one morsel of bread, one drop of something, that would also be an issa deraisa, the chatzit shear also in the Torah. But in terms of being chayav kares, it wouldn't be chayav kares until you hit the much larger shear. What about in terms of drinking? What's the shear of drinking on Yom Kippur? So the Gemara says, we also have a tradition that the shear is mali lugmav. The amount that a person would fill his cheekful. That's considered to be the shear. How much is that, Lamaisa? So the Gemara says, it depends on the size of the person. Some people have big mouths, some people have small mouths. I don't mean people talk a lot, but they're talking about the size of the cheeks. So how much does that correspond to approximately? So the Rishonim write, it corresponds to about a rove of a revius. So a revius is about 3 ounces. So for an average-sized person, it's give or take about 1.5 ounces of liquid. So it's not a tremendous amount. It's like those little shot glasses that, people drink in schnapps, the chaim cup. Those are usually 1 ounce. So the shear would be approximately 1.5 of those. That's approximately what the shear of what molilum would be. So again, that's all the gabi kores. The Gabi being awesome in a Torah, even the smallest amount of drink would be problematic. So we'll talk a little bit more, hopefully that's from the next year, about the Inuyim, and then we'll talk a little bit about the status of Cholim, and you have someone who halachically is permitted to eat, so how this plays out in terms of how much and when, etc., and what to eat proper. Okay, so we'll continue.
I think that you did this thing last year, I think. I'm going to remember, I think we're going on our shop, so...